Welcome to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast. Every 2 weeks, we explore news and issues affecting hunters, anglers, and conservation across the northeastern United States. If you enjoy the content here, be sure to subscribe to our print or digital versions by calling 800-535-5191 or visit our website at outdoornews.com. Now, here's your host and a man who claims he's immune to buck fever, New York Outdoor News editor Dan Ladd.
Greetings. Welcome to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. Happy to be along. It is officially summer. We had our summer solstice begin earlier this week on June 21st. And as we're speaking, we've got the kids getting out of school right about now. We're getting ready to kick off what will be the 10 busiest weeks of the summer session, basically from now to Labor Day. Things are going to get pretty crazy in the outdoor world. There's going to be folks out there vacationing, having a good time, doing a lot of fishing, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Our main topic is camping. We don't have a guest. My guest is myself. I'm an avid camper. My wife Adrian and I spend a lot of time in the summer in a camper. We've ran the whole gamut of camping, going all the way back to tent camping to owning a small RV. We're going to talk about all of that as we're just coming off a visit to what's called Tear Up the Adirondacks. It's a small trailer festival. And when we say tear up, we mean teardrop campers. And we'll talk all about that in a short while. But first, we want to touch on a few things going on around the Northeast. You know, when we launched this podcast, we had a little news segment we used to do on things happening in the region. And I want to touch on a couple of topics here. And the first comes from Connecticut, where the headline is, "A moose wanders onto airport and is then euthanized." And this comes out of Windsor Locks, Connecticut. I'll read you this story. Environmental officials killed a moose in Connecticut after it wandered onto the grounds of a major airport on June 19th. Officials decided to put the animal down, citing safety concerns for air travelers and drivers along a nearby highway. DEEP, that's the State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, said the animal never breached the perimeter fence that protects the airport's runways and no flights were affected. The animal had not been injured. DEEP estimates there are between 100 and 150 moose in Connecticut. Bradley International Airport is New England's second largest airport, based only behind Logan in Boston, and serves Connecticut and western Massachusetts. Now, folks, there's some irony here, and that's why I wanted to share this story with you. Moose is a big topic. We've talked about it quite a bit in this podcast and in New York Outdoor News. It's something we follow regularly. Moose are a very interesting species, and I'm going to just share my own opinion with you here a little bit and allow you to make your own. The question I raise is, why did they have to kill this moose? Here's a state, Connecticut, that will not allow bear hunting. I believe DEEP has tried to establish a bear season, but politically, emotionally, it's struck down. Yet this state has a bear problem. I mean, back in just recently, a 74-year-old woman suffered bites to her arms and legs when she was attacked by a black bear. She was walking her dog near a Hartford suburb, and they estimate between 1,000 and 1,200 black bears living in Connecticut. And that's not the only problem they've had. Back in October, a 250-pound black bear mauled a 10-year-old boy who was playing in his grandparents' backyard. So we've got bear attacks in Connecticut, especially western Connecticut, which borders New York. And we've talked about this before, the bear issues that stretch, you know, from that part of Connecticut into southeastern New York over into northern New Jersey. New Jersey also struggles with bear hunting. And this is what we call exurbia, folks. It's not necessarily suburbia. Some of it is, but you also have a lot of former woodlands that are now developed. Take a 100-acre piece of property, for example, divide it by 10, and it's subdivided. You still have a lot of woods there, places where wildlife can live, deer, bear, and in this case, moose. And but how many people are actually able to hunt that? You know, how many people will hunt it for one thing, or be allowed to hunt? So if you have 10 acre parcels, of those 10-acre parcels, maybe you can hunt two or three of them. So you've got another 70 acres minus the development, you know, where wildlife is running around. That's exurbia. And that's where the populations are growing in that type of habitat, because the habitat is there for the animals to live, but they're also close by humans. Myself, I'm not much of a bear hunter, but if I was, I have to ask if I would want to hunt a bear in an area like that. But there are people that do, and I have spoken with DEC officials here in New York, and that's one of the issues they see in the future. If people don't start hunting more in that part of southeastern New York, we could have a bear problem there. When you couple that with what's going on in Connecticut and even New Jersey, you know, you can see the bigger picture. So back to the moose. Here in New York, when we have a problem with a moose or something like that, they do everything they can, DEC does, to save that moose and relocate it. They probably didn't have the resources for that in Connecticut, which is sad, just to kill a moose because of its location. But yet, the irony is we're killing a moose in a state where, you know, we consider killing a bear to be a bad thing, I guess, if you're a non-hunter. But that's what's going on in Connecticut. I wanted to share that with you while we're on the subject of moose. Both Maine and Vermont are getting ready to announce their moose lotteries. I think some of them may have already happened. If not, they're happening soon, meaning their seasons will be announced. Up in Vermont, there's also some youth waterfowl training going on, some good things going on up there in the Lake Champlain region. Getting back to moose, if you're interested in moose, Episode 15 of this podcast, March 2nd, we had Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department of Deer and Moose Project Leader Nick Fortin on, and that was a great discussion. So if you really want to hear more about moose and how they're managed in the Northeast, including here in New York, but across all the great Northeast woods, you know, from New York to Maine, go back and listen to Episode 15 of this podcast. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back with a whole bunch of cool camping stuff right after this.
New York Outdoor News is the most timely and reliable source for hunting, fishing, and conservation news in the Empire State. 26 times per year, we'll drop our print edition directly into your mailbox, or you can access our digital content via your laptop, tablet, or smartphone. Annual print or digital subscriptions start at just $30. The state's best fishing reports, the latest news from the DEC, and top hunting and fishing tips. To subscribe, visit outdoornews.com/New York.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. Happy to be along with you as we kick off the summer. We want to talk about camping. Our next issue of New York Outdoor News will be the June 30th issue, and we've got a lot going on there. I'll share some of that with you a little later on. But the issue after that, July 16th, we're going to talk a lot about camping. We've got some new camping features coming. One with a dear friend of mine, a great outdoor writer named Leo Maloney, who's an avid camper, and we're going to have a little segment called Camping with Leo. It's going to be very similar to what we do with the Rut Tracker with Oak Duke. But let's get back into camping. Camping is a great activity to do in the summer. Everyone I know has probably camped somewhere. Maybe it's in their backyard, sleeping in a tent, having that experience of sleeping outside, spending some time outside by a campfire. But when you take that to another level, and there are many levels you can take it to, and that's what we're going to discuss here today, is you can really have yourself a good time. And the great part about camping is how it's the base camp, the center point for other activities. Obviously, this time of year, a fishing trip. In the fall, a hunting trip. I even know people that take up winter camping. I can't say I've done too much of that, but there's courses on that and training and, you know, all about getting the right equipment. But we're going to focus on the summer aspect of that, you know, while we stay warm here today. So camping is something near and dear to my heart. Again, it's something my wife, Adrian, and I share, something we enjoy immensely. We wait all year for it. We plan things together. And when you have something like that that you can do with your spouse, it makes it all the more enjoyable. Now, we started camping at music festivals. I've been a career musician, and I used to be a lot more serious in the music business than I am now. And we were attending some of these music festivals that I would be involved in, and we'd stay in a pup tent. And I remember there was this one instance where it just rained all weekend, and let's just say that wasn't a pleasant experience, probably more so for Adrian than myself. And somewhere along the way, we were able to borrow a friend's small trailer and camp in it at one of these music festivals. And I'll tell you, there was no looking back once we did that, especially where Adrian was concerned. She was able to have a kitchen and a refrigerator and all those neat things. And it wasn't long before we were ditching tent camping. But we didn't go right away to a trailer. We went to a pop-up camper, a used one, and it was a beater. And we bought that thing fairly inexpensive, which you can today. And I'll tell you, folks, if you've got a family and you're camping with kids or animals, these little pop-up campers are hard to beat. You can spread them out, and you have two or three beds in them, fold down, and they're really airy, you know. And by that I mean there's, you know, you can open up the screens, and again, there's just a lot of room. So if you get a rainy day and you got to spend some time with the kids in the camper, you've got a lot of room in there where you can play board games or, you know, just have a little fun and bond and get through the bad weather. My wife and I had a pop-up for 7 years, and there's something to be said for that we actually still miss about having that pop-up. You know, we get to a campsite. We camp at a lot of state campsites in New York, state parks, but primarily DEC campgrounds in the Adirondacks. And you get to the campsite where there's a fire pit and a picnic table and a bathroom nearby, and obviously on a lake. And you could move that pop-up around the campsite and set it up the way you want it. That's an option you don't have with a bigger trailer that you, once you back in, you know, you're hopefully you have a good place where you can get that trailer level. But with a pop-up, you can slide that in. There is some maintenance with it. You obviously, if you buy a used one, you want to make sure that the device raises and lowers preferably. So if you do look at a used one before you hand over your hard-earned money, make sure that's all operational. Make sure that crank goes up and down. One of the problems we had with the pop-up we owned, we bought a new one about 20 years ago after we had had the beater for a while, and we wore it out. I mean, we wore out the crank. There was a plastic nut in the housing of the crank, and mice kept getting in there and establishing a nest, and eventually it kept stripping that nut. And it affected the ability to raise and lower the camper. We had it fixed once, and it wound up happening again. But these days, technology's changed. Things are a lot different. There's people that have electronic devices that raise and lower the camper. But let me just tell you one thing with electronics. You know that they rely on battery power and motors rather than human muscle power. So keep that in mind. And that's something folks like me that have a slide out in their camper, we think about every day. Moving parts can fail. But again, getting back to a pop-up, they're a lot of fun to camp in, and they're something you should consider if hitting the road is your desire. You know, if you want to get out, maybe you want to travel across the country, go to the national parks, and or if you're just going to travel around your state in the Northeast, there's so many camping opportunities in these Northeastern states: Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, even Connecticut, Massachusetts, Delaware, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, you know, you've got the coast, New Jersey. There's just so many places that you can go and camp. And the key is finding those places. Every state operates a state park or two or many, I should say. And there's also private campgrounds. The difference being your private campgrounds can be more expensive. They often offer electricity, which is handy. And so they can also be very close. My wife and I prefer the state campgrounds, especially the DEC-operated ones in the Adirondacks, because they're a little more roomy. And we just like being in the Adirondacks. That's us. But we've packed up. We've gone out to the Maine coast and camped out there. We've camped at different state parks, and they're all different, and you have to find what you like. We'll have some tips on that a little later on here. But again, getting back to a pop-up, there's so much you can do with it. And one of the things we did with ours was we put canoe racks on the roof, and that made it a lot easier to load the boats, as long as those boats aren't too long that they're touching your vehicle. We were able to load the boats right on top of that real easy. You know, both of us just lift up. We had a heavy canoe at the time, by the way, and we were able to load that right on and just go down the road. It really, really was a simple setup. We had a lot of fun, and again, there's something to be said for camping in a pop-up. Going back to the basics, tent camping, We all have probably done that if you're a camper, and we still see a lot of people who just keep it simple, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. They keep their tent. Maybe you're going on a backpack trip or a canoe trip, and I've done my share of them, although as I'm getting older, I don't enjoy sleeping on the ground so much, but I do it from time to time. But mostly I do it from a canoe. But, you know, that's when you're really thinking about the bare minimum. If you're backpacking, you're taking the lightest tent you can take, maybe a soft, light styrofoam or foam sleeping pad. I didn't mean to say styrofoam. Maybe just something light that fits. And, of course, the basics, you know, what you need for food. Water is very important, being able to stay warm and, more importantly, stay dry in inclement weather. So you've got your survival gear. You've got your ability to cook and your food and your water. But still, we see a lot of people at campgrounds that do what we call car camping. And that is basically they have their tent, their sleeping bag, everything. Some people bring the kitchen sink and they get themselves a campsite, maybe at the same campground that, you know, there's a full-size RV in right next to them. We're seeing a lot of people just taking advantage of that. They're buying tents and they're setting up their campsites, and they're pretty innovative. That's what's kind of neat about camping. As you walk around a campground and you see how different people do things, it kind of reminds me of ice fishermen, you know, when you see all the different ice shanties out there in the lake and what people do to make them their own. It's the same with a campsite. Everybody's got their little gizmo and the way they do things to stay dry. Screen houses, tarps, easy ups, those types of things, all are part of the picture. But tent camping is still very, very popular. I think it really kicked into high gear during COVID. So many outdoor sports have done that, outdoor activities, I should say. In fact, I was just talking with some friends of mine who own a golf course. And since COVID maybe, I don't like to use this word best things, but COVID definitely was a shot in the arm for that industry. And it sure has been for many other outdoor industries, including camping. So, because you can get away, it's great social distancing. And it has continued, I think, beyond, as we're coming out of COVID, it's continued beyond that because people understand that they can get outside and they're just enjoying it. What's not to enjoy about it? We all love camping that take part in it anyways. And but getting back to tent camping and car camping, you know, basically it's whatever you can fit in that car. And boy, it amazes me what people pile in and then they unload and they set up their campsite and they're ready to go. We're going to have a story coming up in the July 16th issue, I believe, on camping in Allegheny Park with Andrew Zisek, one of our writers. And he does a lot of backpack camping, things like that. He just carries a mess kit and he likes to sleep under the stars. And while we're on the subject of that style of camping, I'm going to tell you one of my favorite things out there in the Adirondacks is what's called an Adirondack lean-to. If you're not familiar with that, they're basically a wooden structure, approximately 8 by 12. And they have a kind of a lean-over. That's why they're called a lean-over roof. And they're close to a fire pit. And the way they're designed, the fire pit can reflect the heat back into the building. Also reflect the smoke, too. But there's like 170 of them in the Adirondacks and more at other state facilities. There's campgrounds, especially in Vermont, where you can rent a lean-to and stay in it, which is really neat. You can drive right to it. Some people even pitch their tent inside them. The beauty of them is you've got a three-sided structure that can keep you dry and even warm if you set it up correctly. And some folks even stretch a tarp across the front. I've done that in the backcountry on hunting trips to keep us warm, or even a screen to keep the bugs out. But the lean-tos are pretty neat things. And I'll be honest with you, how much I like lean-to, I built one in my yard. I live in the Adirondacks and like those type of things. And I just took it up as a hobby when I was logging my property. And if you dig back through some of the editions of New York Outdoor News, you can see where I did a story once on how I built the lean-to. But they're pretty cool, and they're basically somewhere between tent camping and maybe structure camping because, they get you out of the elements. One more thing, every state has their rules for camping in the backcountry, and New York certainly has theirs. I don't know all of the state rules, but I'll share with you what they do in New York because it's probably similar. Basically, a lean-to site, you are supposed to share a lean-to with other people, and that's important, say, in the High Peaks region where people are, you know, really beating themselves up on extended hiking trips, especially if there's bad weather. But otherwise, you know, if a campsite is taken, you're supposed to move on and find a campsite. Now, there are designated campsites all over the place that have a little camp here disc on them. And no matter where they are, you can camp there. Sometimes there's a picnic table and a fire pit and even a privy. But other than that, in the Adirondacks, you are supposed to camp no closer than 150 feet to a trail or waterway. There are some exceptions to that. One of them being, like, say, the Lake George Wild Forest, which is near my home. There, they want you to be 500 feet away from roads and trails and streams and that type of thing. If there's a spot that looks like a good campsite and DEC doesn't want you to camp there, there'll be a camping prohibited sign there. And if you're camping for any more than 3 nights or you're camping with 10 or more people, then you need to get a permit from a local forest ranger. That's how they do it in New York. You may want to check with the DNR of any other state you're camping in here in the Northeast or beyond for that matter. If you're going into the backcountry and are just going to set up a camp somewhere, there are some rules. And the more you know and understand about Leave No Trace, the better. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk about the beauty of RV camping and a few more things right after this.
If you know a kid who loves to hunt and fish, tell them to check out the Outdoor News Junior Pro Team. The Junior Pro Team is about becoming a pro and sharing your photos, videos, and tips. There's members-only discounts. Plus, members can win gear with our weekly drawings. Membership to the Junior Pro Team is free, and kids get a decal, window cling, and membership card when they join. Check out the Outdoor News Junior Pro Team on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and join the team online at juniorproteam.com.
Introducing the all-new OutdoorNews.com, the most trusted source for all things out of doors in the Great Lakes region, just got better. At OutdoorNews.com, you'll now have full access to every outdoor news story, breaking news and updates, our comprehensive fishing and hunting reports, pro tips, and much more for our seven-state region and beyond. Top hunters and anglers look to Outdoor News to keep them up to date and ahead of the crowd. Now it's easier than ever with the all-new OutdoorNews.com.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, flying solo on this late June, early summer podcast. Happy to be along. Hope all you folks are ready for a good summer. Hope you've got some good plans made, especially with your families. If you got kids, we hope you're going to get them out in the outdoors, maybe do some fishing, some hiking, and teach them all about the natural world. We've got the June 30th edition of New York Outdoor News coming in soon. Be showing up in your mailbox. Once again, we're going to pay tribute to Rick McDermott. We talked about him in the last podcast. He passed away on June 10th as a result of a car accident. Rick was the president and founder of the New York Crossbow Coalition. We're going to have more on Rick in that paper. And one of the things, we got some news to report. We've got a coyote contest ban that's approved both the Senate and the Assembly in New York State. And that's headed to the governor's desk. We don't know if she'll sign that or not, but there's quite a bit of debate stirring in the hunting community over that. Some good news in the hunting community is pheasants. DEC has announced that they've acquired some pheasants. They're going to be raising them at the Reynolds Game Farm, which had an avian bird flu outbreak earlier this year. It was an awful thing, but we're bouncing back from that. And we don't have any numbers on that yet, but they'll have a report on that later this summer, early fall. And down along the coast, there's an interesting thing going on regarding sharks. The Department of Environmental Conservation is trying to basically make it a life a little easier for sharks, especially some that are a little more sensitive, perhaps endangered. Let me not use that word endangered because I honestly don't know, but I do know that they're trying to preserve sharks that are more sensitive. They're trying to protect them, I should say. And so there's some surf casting regulations that have been putting in place or proposed to be put in place. And that's stirring a debate amongst some people who enjoy that type of fishing. And this is something that goes on from the Long Island coast, probably maybe not as far north as Maine, but as the waters tend to warm here, there are being more shark reports further up the coast, of course, down the Jersey coast. And we've had some folks weighing in on that. We've had a couple reports on that. We're going to have another story on that in the June 30th issue from some of the stakeholders. We got a letter to the editor from a gentleman who's an avid shark fisherman. And we're going to look at getting some of these folks perhaps on the podcast here pretty soon and talk sharks. We can't let the TV shows that, you know, talk about sharks have all the fun. We're going to have some here in the Great Northeast podcast. So that should be interesting. And on the back page, I had the opportunity to take over the back page for this paper, and our profile was a place called Fish Creek Campground, which is in the northern Adirondacks near Saranac Lake. And that's one of the most popular campgrounds in the Adirondacks, if not New York. And Adrian and I just came back from what's called Tear Up the Adirondacks up there. And this is a tiny trailer festival. Now, not everybody there had tiny teardrop trailers. Say that 10 times real fast. But a lot of folks did, and it was really cool. We attended this just before COVID, and that year that was our first time we met some folks. But this time around, we really got to know some people, and it was just a great time. It rained a lot, but we didn't care. This was really a unique event with some really nice people from all over the country, actually. A lot of folks from Canada, too. Including the organizers, Dave and Kate McGrath. We'll talk more about them shortly because Dave has a service that is really does a lot of folks a favor for camping in New York and beyond. But anyway, it was just a good time, and we're looking forward to going back. And there's so many, again, getting back to how intuitive campers are, these folks that have these tear drops really really have some neat ideas. A lot of them make their own. And we talked a lot about building your own camper, and on top of that, restoring vintage campers, which is kind of a click of its own, a really neat thing. I mean, there was quite a few of those there as well. And every time my wife and I see them, we're like thinking we'd like to do something like that. And I have to seriously say, do I really want to take on that kind of a project? But if you're a handy person with tools and don't mind doing that stuff and want to take something back to a period when it was created, you know, the 1950s or 1960s, there's really something to be said for that. And the smaller campers lend themselves to that. The Zero Scotties and the Airstreams and things like that, it's the Shastas. They're really cool. And that leads me to our topic where Adrian and I are at today. We have a small canned ham camper. It's called an R-Pod. And it's pretty cool. We've had it for 6 or 7 years, and it suits us perfectly. You know, we've done the gamut. We've been through tent camping, pop-ups, and this is our third trailer, and we've had it the longest of any others. And we just enjoy going to the Adirondacks. I call it renting waterfront property for a weekend because that's what we're doing. I live in the Adirondacks, and I love where I live, but I don't live on the water. And I don't know if I would want to live on the water. It's pretty busy on the water. We rent these campsites, and we spend a weekend just camping and paddling our kayaks. And, of course, I do a lot of fishing. I spend a lot of time fishing. I always try to get on an adventure. But the RV lifestyle is pretty great. It's a lot of fun. You can keep everything in the camper. Basically, we don't have to haul a lot in our vehicle, the boats, the fishing gear, clothing, food, that type of stuff, but most of the food goes in the camper. And a lot of folks, when you talk to them who have been camping for a long time, such as ourselves, you'll see that they've graduated through the years from the tents when they were younger. They got where they didn't want to sleep on the ground, and they just kept working their way up. A lot of them have done things with their families, and it's kind of neat. We meet some younger people, and they'll have a story about how they were taken camping by their parents when they were young. And it's something that stays with people. And that's probably my message today in this entire podcast is how camping is something that carries on from generation to generation to generation. In fact, one of my best friends that I camp with, his favorite place to go is Fish Creek because that's where his dad took him when he was a boy. And when I told him I was going to Fish Creek recently for the tear up, he was like, oh, man, I really would like to go up there. And they actually have some camping they do permanently during the summer, seasonal camping at a spot, and they're pretty content with that, but they still miss the way they used to do it. But bottom line, you know, when it comes to camping, it's really anyone can do it. That's even folks who have some disabilities. A lot of the campgrounds we go to have options for that. They have special campsites just for camping. There's actually a place in the Adirondacks called John Dillon Park. that is structured specifically for disabled people. They have lean-tos and campsites, and they're all even wheelchair accessible. And we see that on the waterfront, too. If you go camping by boat, Lake George, there's a place in the Adirondacks called the Stillwater Reservoir. Some of their campsites have docks that you can, if you're in a wheelchair, you can get to. So they're trying to make camping accessible for everyone. And my message is anyone can do it. If you can pack a car, if you can pitch a tent, if you can tow an RV, if you can basically build a fire, you can go camping. And I urge you to do that. Boy, this podcast has gone by quick, and that's what happens when you're talking about a subject that's near and dear to your heart. But once again, I urge you to go camping. One more thing, this gentleman, Dave McGrath, who organizes the Tear Up Festival, he also manages a website called the New York Campsite Photo Database. Just Google that, and you can see pictures of the campsites before you book them. He does have a paywall in front of one of his websites that he calls Basecamp, where he provides more pictures and also cancellations. But got to know Dave a little bit up there at the Tear Up the Adirondacks Festival that we recently went to. And I appreciate what he does. And I think you should check it out before you book. And of course, you can go on reserveamerica.com and start looking at campsites all over the country. And I urge you to get together this summer, get your family together, get your kids together, and go camping. Have a great time, do some fishing, enjoy the outdoors, observe some wildlife. I could keep going on and on and on about the virtues of camping, but I'm going to stop right now and just wish you all a happy summer. For New York Outdoor News and the Great Northeast Podcast, I'm Dan Ladd.
Missed a past episode of the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast? You can find previous programs at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platform. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover on this program, get yourself a subscription to Outdoor News. Simply call 800-535-5191 or visit us at OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us again here in 2 weeks to talk everything out of doors. Thanks for listening to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast.